A new book looks at cancer prevention by reducing our exposure to thousands of chemicals that are in everyday products, from fast food packaging to cleaners. Journalist Christina Marusik is the author of A New War on Cancer, The Unlikely Heroes Revolutionizing Prevention. She profiles doctors, researchers, and other advocates working in their respective fields to protect the public from chemicals in the environment that increase cancer risk. I recently had the chance to talk with her about the book. You write that rates for certain types of cancer are up. In the last 50 years, rates of childhood leukemia have increased by 35%. And this rise can't be explained by genetics because it's been very quick, or entirely by better disease diagnosis. Why should we look towards chemicals?
One thing that has changed in the last 50 years is the number of chemicals that kids are exposed to on a daily basis, and the number that all the rest of us are exposed to, too. In the last approximately 100 years, about 300,000 new manufactured chemicals have been invented. A lot of them are really helpful and have improved our lives in myriad ways, but most of them have also never been tested for safety. And among those that have been tested and have been found harmful, most of those are still on the market, too. So in the last 50 years, the United States has only removed 5 chemicals from U.S. markets because they're found to be harmful.
The book is called A New War on Cancer. Why has the war on cancer thus far focused on treatments and a cure rather than on prevention?
There are two main reasons for this, and the first one is money. There are huge market incentives for cancer treatments. The global oncology market is valued at around $330 billion right now, and that's projected to grow to about $580 billion in 2050. And unfortunately, there's no similar market projection for cancer prevention. No one stands to get super rich off of preventing cancer. So a drive for prevention will have to come from other places outside of the market, namely laws and regulations. And the other reason is that it's harder to advocate for prevention. It's the nature of prevention that you don't get to know whose cancer you prevented. You don't get to meet the person whose life you saved, and you don't get to hear from a family who you spared from the heartache of receiving a childhood cancer diagnosis or having to endure surgery and the treatment process. And that's the reason my book features profiles of people who are advocating for cancer prevention. I really wanted to find a way to humanize this story and make it easier to kind of connect emotionally with the humans who are driving this shift.
Yeah, the book is really focused on people who are looking for solutions. Who are some of the people you profile?
One chapter focuses on a researcher whose work is focused on racial disparities in exposure to chemicals through personal care products, so things like makeup and lotion and shampoo. Another chapter is focused on schools and daycares. We've talked about childhood cancer, and a lot of these chemicals are present in many of the places where kids work and play. And so I also talked with the director of the Children's Environmental Health Network, a Washington, D.C.-based organization that is working really hard to make schools and daycares safer for kids and reduce these kinds of exposures. I also spoke with the founder of the Healthy Building Network. That organization has, for 20 years, tried to reduce the number of cancer-causing chemicals that are used in the materials we use to build our homes and office buildings. They've been really successful in pressuring companies like Home Depot to switch from dangerous building materials to safer options. And then once a really big producer of those products is doing it, a lot of smaller companies kind of have to follow suit.
You also write about B. Braun, which manufactures medical supplies and has worked to replace certain chemicals in things like IV bags and catheters with alternatives. What are some of the chemicals in these supplies and their possible impacts on patients, who are mostly sick people using these products, and how hard is it to find safer solutions?
Most IV bags and tubing contain phthalates like DEHP, that's the main one. That stands for di-2-ethylhexyl phthalate. and DEHP is an endocrine-disrupting compound, so it can disrupt the body's hormonal processes, interfere with reproduction. And then there's increasing evidence that these endocrine-disrupting compounds also play a role in hormone-influenced cancer, so things like breast cancer and testicular cancer. And research has found that patients can receive pretty high doses of these compounds when they're getting an IV, and that those doses can have a negative impact on their health. So, for example, a 2021 study found that among patients being treated for breast cancer, those with higher markers of exposure to DEHP were more likely to relapse following treatment. And patients who had a certain genetic marker who had higher markers for DHP exposure were also more likely to die following treatment. And you mentioned B. Braun, which is actually based in eastern Pennsylvania. They're a company that is trying to replace these chemicals in IV bags and catheters and trying to phase out all of these chemicals in their products. And that's proving much harder than you would think. It's not like a quick, easy switch. These are very elaborate systems that create these products. And so unfortunately, on the consumer end, it's tough to like pick a hospital, for example, that's using IV bags that doesn't include these chemicals. It's certainly something you can ask about, but to be honest, most physicians aren't aware of this and don't recognize it as a problem. So there is a role to play by like sustainability directors at some hospital systems have started doing advocacy work around this. There's an organization of nurses that are advocating for safer chemicals in these kinds of products. And you could keep an eye out for an IV bag made by B. Braun. You could potentially ask. And if the hospital has them, they might be willing to use them. Those IV bags would be free of these products. But I think the main thing is we need more doctors and nurses and other people who work in the healthcare industry to be aware of this and start advocating about this.
When it comes to a cancer diagnosis, a lot of patients think, you know, what could I have done to prevent this? And from your perspective, after writing this book, where does individual choice come in?
Individual lifestyle choices, which includes things like not smoking and diet and exercise, and if you're really thinking about these issues, maybe things like eating organic and trying to minimize your exposure to these chemicals in your everyday life, that stuff is all meaningful. It's important. It matters. There are lots of reasons, in addition to lowering your cancer risk, to eat healthy and exercise and not smoke cigarettes. But, you know, everyone I spoke with for this book said kind of over and over, this problem is so big, we cannot shop our way out of it. We're exposed to these compounds on such a kind of constant basis that even for people who literally have a PhD in this subject matter, they know that they can't just shop carefully enough to protect themselves and their families from these chemicals altogether, and that the only way we're going to achieve that is through systemic change. And I think that, you know, sometimes people can feel really empowered by focusing on those things in their individual lives that they can control. But that's also a lot of responsibility, and it can feel really overwhelming. And I spoke with one oncologist for the book, Dr. Margaret Kripke, who said you can kind of risk blaming the victim if you only focus on those choices and you don't also talk about the systems that contribute to increased cancer risk.
You write that many people assume chemicals are really closely regulated, like food and drugs, and that's not the case. What is the state of regulation, and what are some strides that have been made in the right direction?
Chemical policy in the United States is weaker than in many other countries right now, unfortunately. So the European Union isn't perfect, but they have a number of really comprehensive regulations aimed at protecting people from cancer-causing chemicals that the U.S. could certainly emulate. And this is a big simplification, but kind of fundamentally what happens right now is that the EU requires companies that want to introduce new chemicals to the market to prove that they're safe before doing so. Whereas in the US, you can just put something on the market directly without testing. And if it's proven unsafe 10 or 20 years later, we turn to big class action lawsuits. And we have lots of examples of this related to things like asbestos and Johnson & Johnson baby powder, and now also things like PFAS or forever chemicals. And then sometimes those lawsuits eventually result in new laws, but a lot of times they just kind of stand in for them. And, you know, by the time we get to that point, the damage has already been done. You asked about things that are promising, and I do think there are some really good reasons to be hopeful right now. For the first time ever, the proposed federal cancer moonshot plan includes some references to prevention. In the past, they kind of framed prevention as early detection, which is not actually prevention, right? It's just trying to catch the disease earlier rather than stopping it from happening. So lots of people are pushing to expand those references to prevention in the Moonshot Plan even further and include a more explicit focus on the environment and reducing our exposure to these chemicals. The current head of the EPA, Michael Reagan, actually lost his first son to neuroblastoma, which is a very rare childhood cancer, when he was just 15 months old. So this is an issue that he is both passionate about and aware of. And actually, just 2 weeks ago, I was invited to Washington, D.C. by the EPA's Office of Children's Health Protection to talk to them about these issues and about childhood cancer risk specifically. So we're at a really unique moment in time right now, I think, where we're poised to take meaningful action on this. And that makes it a really great time to get involved and join the fight.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kara.
Christina Marusik is a journalist with Environmental Health News in Pittsburgh and the author of A New War on Cancer, The Unlikely Heroes Revolutionizing Prevention. There are more stories about environmental health in our region at AlleghenyFront.org. You're listening to The Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.